chapter 7. We'll read verses 7 through verse 11. Ask, and it shall be given you. Seek, and ye shall find. Knock, and it shall be opened unto you. For everyone that asketh, receiveth. He that seeketh, findeth. And him that knocketh, it shall be open. Or what man is there of you whom, if his son ask bread, would be daily necessity, will he give him a stone or something worthless? Or if he ask a fish, that would be something a little beyond a necessity, will he give him a serpent or that which would harm him? If ye then, being evil, know how to give good gifts unto your children, how much more shall your Father, which is in heaven, give good things to them that ask him? And this, of course, is a portion, a very small portion, of what is known as the Sermon on the Mount. Matthew records it in chapters 5 through 7. And sadly, this sermon is better known by God's people than understood by God's people. We want to develop the thought of this message from the three verbs found in verse 7. Ask, seek, and knock. What follows is encouragement to ask, seek, and knock. The encouragement is, in verse 7 and 8, there's a promise which encourages us to ask, seek, and knock. In verses 9 through 11, by way of encouragement to ask, seek, and knock, we have the person. And we have the character of God. So in this portion of the Sermon on the Mount, we are exhorted to ask, to seek, to knock, and then we are given encouragement to do so. Everything in our text, verses 7 through 11, centers upon these three words and comes back to these three words. As you read through the Sermon on the Mount, if you're just reading through it, and you come to this portion of the sermon, verse 7, ask, seek, and knock, those words in their position seem somewhat random. But again, I assure you, that's not the case. But we must ask, why did Christ speak these words at this particular point in the sermon? As you look at this sermon, I believe there's many homiletical lessons here. But as you look at this sermon, it's very well organized. It's point by point by point. But why did he, at this point in the sermon, say, ask, seek, and knock? How do these words relate to what Christ had just said in the sermon? You might expect to find these words in the first part of Matthew 6, where he spoke upon the subject of prayer. That's not where we find them. The immediate context of these words And by that I mean that which immediately is before and that which is immediately after these words, ask, seek, and knock. Make these words again appear to be random. So just before he spoke these words, Matthew 7 verses 1 through 6, Christ shows the danger of condemning other people and harboring bitterness in our hearts toward them while being oblivious to the sin in our own life. Something that we all by nature do. And he showed the extreme importance of removing sin out of our lives. Something that we are very prone by nature to neglect. The words of chapter 7, verses 1 through 6 flows into what is said here in verses 7 through 11. Most specifically, ask, seek, and knock. And then this is followed by verse 12. And notice the first word in verse 12. Therefore. Therefore. Indicative of what has gone before, or indicative that this is the application of verses 7 through 11. Again, the immediate context. So as in verses 1 through 6, what we read in verse 12 goes contrary, goes against every fiber of our fallen and depraved nature, goes against every fiber of our natural instincts. In other words, it's not something that we would naturally do. So in verses 1 through 6 and verse 12, there are two principles that are contrary to our natural inclination. Between these two principles is what we read in verses 7 through 11. Mainly, ask, seek, and knock. So these two principles, one stated in verses 1 through 6, the other stated in verse 12, are beyond mere human ability. They are beyond mere human effort. And in between these two principles, we find verses 7 through 11. Mainly, ask, seek, and knock. Every child of God ought to earnestly desire to obey verses 1 through 6. Every child of God ought to desire to obey what is being taught in verse 12. The question, how do we do that? How do we obey verses 1 through 6? How do we obey verse 12? Is there help somewhere? Is there enablement somewhere? Yes, there is. Where is it? Ask, seek, and knock. In this message, we want to view our text, again, mainly ask, seek, and knock, in the context of the entire Sermon on the Mount. And our subject is the necessity of a persistent pursuit of God. The necessity of a persistent pursuit of God. First of all, we want to consider the teaching of the text briefly, and then we'll summarize the Sermon on the Mount and see how these words of our text apply. But first of all, the teaching of the text. We're mostly concerned with verse 7. We're not concerning ourselves with what we've mentioned, has the encouragement to do this. We don't have the time to do that tonight, so we're concerning ourselves mostly with verse 7. In that verse, there is an action prescribed. This, of course, is seen in the threefold usage of the verbs ask, seek, and knock. These three acts are in the form of a command. Therefore, they are indicative of a duty. It is our duty to ask, seek, and knock. These three words can also be viewed in the form of an invitation. That would be indicative of a privilege, an opportunity on our part, and it would be indicative of love and kindness on God's part. We are commanded, ask, seek, knock, but are we not also invited to ask, seek, and knock? So these three words we see are personal. It's something we do as individuals. This is seen in the first person singular pronouns of verse 7, you, ye, you. Verse 8, one, he, him. So this is personal. Each one of us is to personally ask, seek, and knock. Each of these verbs is something that you do on purpose and with a purpose. To ask, you do that on purpose and you do it with a purpose. To seek, you do that on purpose and you do it with a purpose. And to knock, you do on purpose and you do with a purpose. Ask, seek, knock. Those three words speak of personal focus. They speak of personal single-mindedness. So as you look at these three words, I believe they speak of varying degrees of the same thing. Ask, seek, and knock. There is an increase in intensity in those words. In other words, seeking is of a greater intensity than asking. And knocking is of a greater intensity than seeking. Now I believe where most, almost exclusively, make a mistake is they limit these three words, ask, seek, and knock, to varying degrees of praying. And I believe most certainly that there is an application here to praying. But I also believe that praying is, in these words, is only a part of something larger, of something greater. So ask, seek, knock, without a doubt, applies to prayer. But I believe there's an emphasis that goes beyond praying. and is included in praying. And what is being emphasized in ask, seek, and knock, and in verse 8, the words asketh, seeketh, knocketh. This is where we find the help. This is where we find the strength and the ability. For the standards and duties mentioned immediately before and immediately after these verses. This is where we find enablement. This is where we find help. This is where we find enablement. This is where we find strength to live the life that is portrayed in the Sermon on the Mount. I believe these three words, ask, seek, and knock, they ought to characterize our entire life. They ought to characterize everything that is mentioned in the Sermon on the Mount. They ought to be a mark upon our lives. Ask, seek, and knock. So what is emphasized in those three words? We know they have application to prayer. But there's something more. And prayer is a part of this. But what is being emphasized here is a pursuit of God. A pursuit of God. Everything, and I mean everything about the Christian life, everything about the life that we are called to live, everything about the life that we are placed here to live, consists of a persistent pursuit of God. A pursuit of God. Ask, seek, and knock. And then in verse 8, these are in present tense form. Asketh, seeketh, knocketh. Which of course conveys the idea of a habit. It ought to be our habit to ask, seek, and knock. It ought to be our habit to pursue God. It's a persistence. It's a perseverance. There ought to be a persistent, persevering pursuit of God. That is the Christian life. We must realize our personal need. We must realize that we are a needy people. And realizing that, we continually, persistently, and perseveringly ask, seek, and knock. So what Christ is describing in verse 7 and 8 is really an exercise in persistence and perseverance toward God. Three words, ask, seek, and knock. Christ is saying, pursue God with persistence and perseverance. Ask, seek, and knock are words of exhortation to seek and strive after God. Pursue God. Every day, pursue God. Whatever your other responsibilities are, you fulfill those responsibilities, but in every single one of them, you pursue God. Persistently. That is, you follow after God. You strive for God. You work toward God. You aim at God. You aspire to God. Ask, seek, and knock. This is to be the activity in our life. This is to mark. This is to characterize our life. Pursue God. We must ask ourselves, how often do we really pursue got. Well, we pursue a lot of things, and we pursue spiritual matters. But do we pursue God? To pursue God, of course, means that we are moving toward God. To persistently and perseveringly pursue God means that we are always moving toward God. You can't go wrong doing that. You can't go wrong moving in the direction of God. You can't get lost moving in the direction of God. You don't get off track moving in the direction of God. Ask, seek, and knock. Pursue God. This is to mark our lives. Pursue God. People say, well, I'm in pursuit to be a better church member. Well, here's how you do that. Pursue God. Pursue God. I'm in pursuit to pray more. Pursue God. That's our object of pursuit. Our object of pursuit is to pursue God. Pursue God. It's an inclination, it's a movement toward the Lord. And it proceeds from a few things. A sense of need. Oh, when you really feel need, you pursue God. If that's the only time you pursue God, you're guilty of using God as a fire escape. But there has to be a sense of need if we're going to pursue God. But even more importantly than that, there has to be an attraction to God. You pursue what you're attracted to. Our degree of pursuit of God defines our degree of attraction to God. If we're going to pursue God, that also comes from a preference for God. In all things, God ought to be our preference. Pursue God. Ask, seek, and knock. That proceeds from a desire for God. It proceeds from a delight in God. The psalmist said in Psalm 63:1, my soul thirsteth for thee, my flesh longeth for thee. That's desire. That's a desire for God. But then he goes on to say, early will I seek thee. That is pursuit. But don't you see, the pursuit flows from the desire. In Isaiah 26, verse 9, with my soul have I desired thee in the night. There it is again, there's desire. But he goes on to say, yea, with my spirit within me will I seek thee early. There's the pursuit. So it's delight, desire, and pursuit. They're interlinked. And they're absolutely essential to living the life that we're called to live and placed here to live. Delight in God, desire for God, pursuit of God. Desire for God springs from delight in God, and pursuit of God springs from delight and desire. So when our delight in God is diminished, then desire for the Lord is lessened, and then pursuit of God becomes slack. Ask, seek, and knock. Those words are indicative of a yearning for God, a craving, a hunger for God. And we need to examine our own hearts. What is our yearning for God? What is our craving and our hunger for God? Because our yearning and craving for God ought to be a characteristic mark of our life. It is to have a heart for God. You can't live the Christian life if you do not have a heart for God. Has to be. You will not pursue God in its truest sense without a heart for God. And this is absolutely necessary in order to live this life that we were saved to live, that we're called upon to live, that we're placed here to live. A heart for God is a heart taken up with the Lord. Those three words, ask, seek, and knock, they speak of a passion for God. They speak of a fervor, an enthusiasm for God. You can go through all the motions and robotically perform all the deeds of a Christian life without a pursuit of God. Without a pursuit of God. Pursue God. This is where we find the ability to live the life that we're called to live. And it is a characteristic mark of every aspect of the life that we are called to live. So consider the connection between the overall teaching of the Sermon on the Mount and what we read here in our text. The Sermon on the Mount, Jesus presents a portrait of a true disciple. How they should think, how they should act, how they should react to life in an antichrist world. What Christ is speaking of is he's really giving instruction in the kingdom way of life. He's teaching us how to live as people of God in God's kingdom. With that in mind, remember what Jesus said in John 18:36. My kingdom is not of this world. And therefore, kingdom way of living is not of this world. It doesn't come from this world. It is something entirely foreign to the world. It is something that does not come naturally to us. In the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus is giving us a description of what a child of God is to be. It is really Jesus' most comprehensive statement of a child of God's role in this life. And it really becomes the litmus test for the measure of our spiritual development. As you read the sermon, Jesus preached this sermon not merely as a set of rules, but as a life to be lived. It is a call to radical living for Christ. The question is, how do we live such a life? Where do we find what we need to live such a life? Because it's not within us, in and of ourselves. The answer is, ask, seek, and knock. The answer is, pursue God. Pursue God, because He's everything you need. Pursue God. Jesus is preaching a very particular and peculiar way of living. He is preaching a very definite lifestyle, a kingdom life. It is a life of Christ's rule. It is a life of living in which Christ's throne is established in our hearts. It is living with His power within and upon our lives. It is living in light of His ownership. It is living in light of His authority. It is living life exalting Jesus Christ. It is living in submission and obedience to all of His laws. Living by God's design. Living by God's standards. It is spiritual living. It is right living. And it is described in Matthew 6, verse 33, as His righteousness. His righteousness. Not our standard of righteousness. His righteousness. The entire sermon serves as a vivid reminder that our lives on this earth is not about personal fulfillment. It's not even about peace of mind. It's not even about happiness. It's not about careers. It's not about achievements. It's not about the acquisition of things, and it's not about human approval. It's all about Him, and it's His righteousness. And for this reason we were created, and for this reason we were saved, to live this life upon earth. People say all the time, I don't know why the Lord saved me. Well, you ought to. To live a life that He has called you to live. To live a life that brings honor and glory to His name. That's why He saved us. That's why He's left us here. And the Sermon on the Mount describes this life. It is a life that is distinct from both the secular and the religious world. It is a life that stands in stark contrast to both the secular and the religious world. It is a life lived above the norm of the secular and above the norm of the religious. It is a radical alternative to the modern ideas and values of so-called Christianity. The Sermon on the Mount. What is presented here is impossible from mere human energy, from mere human effort. But yet it is a possible life for the child of God. Ask, seek, and knock. Persistently pursue God in order to live this life. As you just quickly, if you were to go through the Sermon on the Mount, it is a life that exceeds religion. Matthew 5. Verse 20. Except your righteousness shall exceed the righteousness of the scribes and the Pharisees. It's a righteousness that exceeds the righteousness of the scribes and the Pharisees. Matthew 5, verse 48, "But be ye therefore perfect, even as your Father which is in heaven is perfect." I believe everything in the sermon centers around those two verses. There has to be a righteousness that exceeds the righteousness of the scribes and the Pharisees. It is God. He's our standard. It's His righteousness. It's a life where we strive for God's highest. How do we do that? We pursue God. It exceeds the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees means that it is more than just playing a part. Christianity is not a game. Christianity is not a play. It's not a performance. It's a life that involves a persistent pursuit of God. When I get up in the morning, I ought to pursue God. When I go through the day, I ought to pursue God. Do I do that all the time? No. No. Not at all. I'd be much better off if I did. Just pursue God. Pursue God. Well, what if this happens? Pursue God. Well, what about this? Pursue God. Well, have you thought of this? Pursue God. That needs to be the characteristic of our life. God help us. And if we're going to live above just a merely religious life, it requires a pursuit of God. We also see in Matthew 5, the beginning verses, that this life requires certain attitudes. Attitudes that we do not have in and of ourselves. How do you get these attitudes? Ask, seek, and knock. You pursue God. This kingdom life requires a particular function in the world. We are salt, we are light in the world. Both of those reveal that we're separate. And we're unique to the world. But it's a life of spiritual impact in the world. How do we impact the world spiritually? Pursue God. You can't do it without that. Kingdom living requires a proper spirit toward the law of God. That's addressed in Chapter 5, verses 17 through verse 48. The law of God has a big part here. And in verse 17 and 18, there's a call to think correctly concerning Christ and His law. Verse 19, we see the seriousness of breaking God's law. Verse 20, we see that keeping the law goes beyond the letter. Goes beyond the outward. So how do we do this? A persistent pursuit of God. How do you obey? Pick a commandment. How do you obey it? Pursue God. Ask, seek, and knock. This life requires certain activities. Chapter 6, verses 1 through 4, we're to serve God, we're to do good. How do you do that? Pursue God. Verses 5 through 13 of chapter 6, we're to pray, which is a form of pursuing God, or should be. Verses 14 and 15, we're to forgive. How do we do that? We pursue God. Verse 16 through 18, we're to fast. And everything we do is to be with the right motive. How do we accomplish that? Pursue God. We also see this living requires right priorities. We see this in verses 19 through 34 of chapter 6. There must be right values. Verses 19 through 21. There must be right loyalties. Verse 24. You see, because wrong values lead to misplaced loyalties, and all of that gets in the way of living the life that we're called to live. Verses 25 through 32, there must be right concerns. We must be concerned about the right things. Verse 33, there must be right pursuits. Seek ye first the kingdom of God. Seek ye first the kingdom of God. That's just another way of saying pursue God. And you do that first. It's not number 8 on the list after you've tried everything else. Seek ye first. All of this requires a persistent pursuit of God. It all requires that we persistently ask, seek, and knock. I believe this is the key. If we're going to exemplify the life that is presented in the Sermon on the Mount, if we're going to conform to the pattern of the Sermon on the Mount, we have to pursue God. If we're going to live the life that we were saved to live and called to live and placed here to live, pursue God. Pursue God. Always be moving in the direction of God. If you want to know God more, pursue Him. If you want to walk with God, pursue Him. If you want to experience God, you pursue God. And again, we pursue whatever it is our heart is set upon. We're needy people, and God has everything that we need. Ask, seek, and knock. Does that not express that God has provided a way? We are a needy people, and He's everything that we need. But God has provided a way. The life that is presented in the Sermon on the Mount is the most profitable life that you can live. It is the most useful life you can live. It is the most serviceable life you can live. It is the most influential life you can live. It is the most worthwhile and meaningful life that you can live. And here's the key. Ask, seek, and knock. In other words, pursue God. Pursue God. Whatever the circumstance, pursue God. Whatever our thoughts, whatever our moods, pursue God. That needs to be a prayer of ours. God, help me to pursue You in all that I do. In order to do that, we need to also pray, Lord, give me a heart for You. Because it's a heart for God that will pursue the Lord. So we close by asking, to what degree are lives marked by a pursuit of God? What is it that we are in pursuit of overall? Overall in our overall life, what is it that we're in pursuit of? I pray that these three words would ring in our hearts: ask, seek, and knock. Again, they intensify. I believe they're speaking of the same thing, but there's an increase in intensity. It's growing. The older we get in the Lord and the days in which we live, if God's people aren't going to pursue God now, they're never going to. We need to pursue the Lord. God help us to always move in the direction of God. You move in the direction of God, you may not know where that direction is taking you, but you're moving in that direction with Him, and it'll take you to Him. You may experience many things along the way, but don't be deterred. Just keep pursuing the Lord. Brother Jim, if you'd come and lead us first song.